what you learn from your losses is always so much greater than what you learn from your victories. The confidence that it instills in you just by knowing you can get through something, whether it turns out good or bad or indifferent, you can get through it. You have a bad day, you got to bounce right back because the next day and the next competition is right around the corner.
It's an awesome day to have a good day. Emily Abadi here, checking in with episode 93 of Hurdle, a wellness-focused podcast where I sit down with inspiring individuals to talk about everything from their big wins to how they've gotten through some of life's toughest moments. On the show, you can expect vulnerability, motivation, and candid discussions with everyone from top athletes to aspiring entrepreneurs on what it really takes to follow your passions. My mission is simple: to inspire you to be your best self, move with intention, and have some fun along the way. Y'all, I am amped right now. Okay, total understatement. Hurdle is featured in the Sunday New York Times. What is that sentence? I don't even know. I'm on cloud nine and I'm sitting here reflecting on, man, the last 2 years and the 92 episodes that have come before now and all of the hurdle moments, the interactions, meeting so many of you, your support, and I'm just feeling so grateful. With that said, if you are listening right now and you are new to the show, thank you. Welcome. I'm so happy to have you. I would love more than anything if you could subscribe, keep up with me on the regular, and of course, if you like what you're listening to, rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Today, I'm going to be bringing you my conversation with Wendy Yang. She is the president of Hoka One One, Teva, and Sanuk, all part of the Deckers Group. Before I get into it, a quick shout out to my sponsor, Athletic Greens. With the antioxidant equivalent of 12 servings of fruits and vegetables, no matter what is going on in my life, whether I'm stressed or maybe haven't been eating the best, I feel like by starting my day off with the greens powder, I am taking a step in the right direction. By shaking it up first thing, not only am I getting those good for me antioxidants, but I'm also getting a slew of other greatness. I'm talking prebiotics, probiotics, adaptogens, superfoods. I used to be the kind of person that was hooked on gummy vitamins, guilty, but now I've stopped leaning into about 3 to 4 different pill bottles in the morning just in favor of this one sweet sip. They are offering Hurdle listeners an awesome deal. It's 20 travel packs, a $79 value, absolutely free with your first purchase. Just head on over to athleticgreens.com/hurdle. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/hurdle to grab yours today. No code necessary. All right, now let's talk about Wendy. Wendy grew up in a super active family, the daughter of Major League Baseball pitcher Wilbur Wood, most known for his career with the Chicago White Sox. Wendy had a love for sport just like her father. She played tennis at Rice University and then went on to play in the professional tour until 1988. Today, we talk about what it was like traveling the globe playing tennis and what life was like after she put down the racket, leaning into an extensive career in the athletic apparel and footwear industry. She's got so much knowledge. She's worked literally almost everywhere from Reebok to New Balance to Timberland and Tommy Hilfiger. We talk about what it's like to be one of the few women in senior management and how she landed such amazing and interesting jobs at so many of these awesome brands. Of course, we get into what exactly is happening with Hoka. We talk about those super cushiony sneakers, what the deal is with those, why they're created like that, and how the company has grown to such a major player in the running space. As always, hurdlers, if you have a hurdle moment of your own to share or you just want to say hi, you can reach me over email. It's emily@hurdle.us. And also connect with the pod on Instagram and Twitter. It's @hurdlepodcast, @EmilyAbadi. Oh, I hope this good vibes feeling lasts for a long time. With that, let's get to hurdling. Today, I'm sitting down with Wendy Yang. She is the president of performance lifestyle at Deckers Brand. That includes Hoka, Teva, and Sanuk.
That's right.
Hello.
Hi, Emily.
How are you?
I'm good.
I feel like there are just two things we need to establish on the record right off the bat.
Okay.
First and foremost, how do you say the Hoka brand name?
Well, technically, it's Hoka One One.
Okay.
But we're fine with just saying Hoka.
Okay. And another controversial one, Teva.
Teva, yes. It tends to be east of the Mississippi, people say Teva. And west, they say Teva. And actually, I'm from the Boston area. And before I moved here and came in contact with Deckers, I myself said Teva. So
I definitely grew up saying Tevas.
Right.
Thank you so much for coming to hang out with me today. We are in beautiful Santa Barbara. Never been before.
I'm so glad you're here. It is beautiful, isn't it?
It is. I feel like I was saying to my girlfriend earlier that it seems like a little piece of Aspen, but without the snow and a lot of palm trees.
And not a bad place to be in January when you're from the East Coast either, right?
It's true. And you yourself grew up on the East Coast. So why don't you talk to me a little bit about your journey and starting back over near Boston.
Okay. Yeah. Born and raised, and until 5 years ago, really that's where I lived my whole life. We traveled a lot when I was a kid, but always, you know, the Boston area, Lexington and Concord in specific, those that was home. You know, about 5 years ago, an opportunity presented itself. And so my family and I, decided why not.
Talk to me a little bit about what life was like for you growing up in Boston. Were you an active kid?
So yeah, growing up in Boston, yeah, I was a tomboy. I was always kind of running around and loved sports, just loved to move. And my dad was a professional baseball player, Wilbur Wood. And, you know, we traveled a fair amount. We would go to Florida in the spring for spring training, to Sarasota, Siesta Key. And then we'd go to Chicago in the summer for the baseball season. And in between, you know, we were you know, at home doing our thing. But I was always, you know, outside and tormenting my brother and with my little sister, too. And when I was 12 years old, my dad actually suffered an injury. He got hit with a line drive in the knee, and it was kind of a big deal. He was at the height of his career. And that was the first summer that we weren't going to go to Chicago. And my mother said, hey, you know, what do you want to do? What do you guys want to do this summer? And I had been hitting a tennis ball with a badminton racket off the side of our shingled house and just really thought that was, I don't know how that happened, but it's what I was doing. And I was spending a lot of time doing it. And I said, I'd really like to go to tennis camp. So my mom said, okay, let's do that. Let's make that happen for you. And so I went to tennis camp and really never looked back. You know, it was first kind of real formal organized sport that I had done, and I just loved it.
I can't imagine, first of all, hitting at a shingled house and all the directions and how frustrating that must have been with the ball coming back at you.
Yes. And then there's a big hill behind me. So it was, I'm not sure what I saw in it either, but I loved it. Maybe it was a challenge.
An added challenge. How did you like tennis camp? You loved it.
I loved it. You know, I loved it. And I was really, really lucky. You know, this small camp that my mom found for me, they were super picky about, you know, about form. And I was a real athletic kid and could kind of run around and, you know, do things came fairly easy to me. And but this camp was like they were sticklers on getting the right form. It wasn't just about getting the ball over the net. It was about hitting the ball properly. And I think having that real solid foundation as a beginning was a real blessing in the long run.
And so you started to fall in love with tennis. And did you play tennis throughout high school?
I did. Yeah, I fell in love with tennis. I started playing and played my first tennis tournament and was doing really well and sort of climbed up in the rankings and, you know, played all through high school and through New England tennis and then started playing national tournaments. And, you know, then it was time, you know, to go to college. And it was, I had an opportunity to play on in college and leave New England and play Division I tennis at a quite a high level. And
what school?
I went to Rice University.
Okay.
In Houston, Texas.
A little bit of a climate change there.
Climate change and culture change.
Yeah. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate, you know, to have grown up in New England, and I don't know it any other way, obviously, but, you know, sort of the work ethic and grit, and I'm not saying that's not everywhere, but, you know, I think New England is sort of known for that, and maybe the cold weather, people feel they have to work harder or whatever. But going to Rice in Houston, Texas, it was a great experience for me. It was, you know, it was warm. You could play tennis outside all the time, but it was a culture shock because what I find in New England, you have to prove yourself to people. They don't necessarily give you the benefit of the doubt. You prove yourself to people and then you're welcomed in. In the South, and this is a gross generalization, but it was my experience, you know, I really found that people were very welcoming right out of the gate. They just warmly accepted you, you know, and then, you know, until maybe you proved yourself otherwise. So right out of the gate, people were like, oh, hey, Wendy, you know, you want to do this? Come on with us. Yeah, let's go do this. Yeah, let's, you know, and I was like, wait, who, what's happening here? They don't even know me. You know, what do they want from me? You know, I quickly realized, oh, no, this is just how it is. And that's a beautiful thing.
So did you go on a tennis scholarship then?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
And so how was balancing that at first with academics and making time for tennis and handling the two?
Yeah. I mean, by that time, you know, I was kind of used to that all through high school. I was playing more and more and more. So it wasn't a huge adjustment for me, really. I threw myself in to both. You know, I chose Rice because I felt like I wouldn't be sacrificing academics and I wouldn't be sacrificing athletics. I could really have the best of both worlds. And that's what I found my experience to be. You know, and also, you know, my parents were going through a divorce. And I think in a way, getting that far away from home sort of enabled me to be free of everything that was happening because in my mind, I felt like, oh, you know, I guess there's nothing I can do about it anyway. And, you know, for a 17, 18-year-old kid, that was really liberating.
I think it's interesting also kind of coming to a place with hard stuff like that where you understand that, hey, there's nothing I can do about this. It's already happening, and accepting that instead of just sitting there and blaming yourself or internalizing how you feel.
Yes.
Or to accept that this is how it is now and all I can do is move forward with what I have.
Yes. And for whatever reason, having those many miles in between was helpful to me. I think if I had gone, you know, to school closer to home, I might have felt sort of still tied and maybe like there was something I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was really freeing for me in a lot of ways. And then, you know, so I threw myself into tennis and to school, but I really threw myself into tennis.
Do you have any like standout memories from your first year playing collegiate tennis?
The biggest memories are being part of a team and a really close team. And those women still remain some of my closest friends. And, you know, developing those really deep, rich friendships as a freshman in college that now are relationships that have stood the test of time. That's the richest part of it all, without a doubt. It has played such a role in making me who I am today. It, more than anything, has helped to form me in so many ways. What you learn from your losses is always so much greater than what you learn from your victories. The confidence that it instills in you just by knowing you can get through something, whether it turns out good or bad or indifferent, you can get through it. Even if things don't go your way, you get through it. And sports is all about resiliency. So you have a bad day, you got to bounce right back because there's the next day and the next competition is right around the corner. And realizing that, oh, I can do that. Oh, I am resilient. Oh, that doesn't define me. Wow, to have learned that life lesson at a relatively young age, which is what sports, I think, afford you, is just, it's just huge. You know, and also the ability to dig deep. The human spirit is so incredible. And I think through training, and that's certainly something you know as an endurance athlete, and through putting yourself on the line, competing toe-to-toe, you find that you can dig deep and go to levels you didn't know you had. And that's something that later in life, in whatever the situation may be, you can tap into.
While you are playing collegiate tennis, how is the college experience? Are you like going out and doing all that stuff? Are you kind of cut off from that because you're so focused on tennis, or what's happening there?
You know, I was probably kind of nerdy. big into tennis and took that very seriously. And, you know, and I really love school too. And I took that very seriously. So there wasn't a lot of other time, but I had a lot of fun. I was never like a big partier.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of fun.
And I mean, you're also doing a fair amount of traveling, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, any college athlete, Division I, Division II, Division III, but more and more, I mean, you know, it's a rigorous schedule. So the travel and keeping up with school and.
But cool though, because when you were growing up, did you have, aside from going to and from with your father to follow him around and watch some baseball, did you have the opportunity to do a lot of traveling?
My mom was always really good about exposing us to things. And so it wasn't necessarily exotic travel, but, you know, this was back in the day. It was before free agency. So, you know, when my dad was at the peak of his career and, you know, arguably one of the best, you could look it up. It's before free agency. So in the off season, he worked as a plumber for my mother's dad. So I share that just to say the travel we did would be like driving to Florida for spring training. And my mother would make sure that we would stop along the way and check out different places and see different things. And we'd go to museums, we'd go to art exhibits, we'd go to plays, we'd go to music stuff. So she made sure that we always kind of made the most of wherever we were and saw new things and experienced different stuff.
But a little bit different when you're literally traveling the entire country for tennis.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Totally. Okay. So then what are we studying in college?
I was a managerial studies major, which is like a business major.
Okay.
Yep.
And did you have any aspiration for what you wanted to do when you got out of there? Did you think that it would be professional tennis?
No, I didn't. I didn't. That didn't really become a realistic opportunity until, you know, like my junior and senior year.
What happens junior and senior year that playing pro tennis seems like a viable option for you?
Again, I was really lucky. And I think this has changed over the years with nutrition and training, but you know, a lot of young women peak by 20 years old, depending on what the sport is. And again, I think that is changing now. But I kept improving. And in part, again, I think it was the environment I was in. I was playing number one for Rice and I was winning this. We were in the Southwest Conference back then. So these are big, big schools. I won the Southwest Conference and, you know, was ranked pretty highly nationally. And so it became a realistic opportunity to at least give the women's circuit, you know, a chance.
And how does that go for you?
Well, you know, that was an amazing experience. Talk about that kind of travel and getting to go kind of around the world and explore all kinds of different cultures and places. But it doesn't go as well, to be perfectly honest. I was on the circuit for almost 3 years. I definitely lost a lot more matches than I won, but it was pretty awesome to have the opportunity to do that.
With all of those losses, what is it that kept you going after it? That's like such an interesting first takeaway. Like I ask you, how did it go? And you're like, well, I lost a lot more than I won, but you still seem to have such a positive reflection of the time period.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the benefit of time too, right? You always look back and you remember the highlights or the good things more than you do the bad things. Fortunately, I think that's a survival thing. You know, I remember talking to my dad during that time, like, geez, you know, I just don't know. It's not going well. I don't know if I have it in me. And, you know, he shared with me some of, you know, what he went through when he was trying to breakthrough in baseball. And that was certainly helpful, but it didn't work for me like it did for him. So I sort of got to a point after about 3 years and I said, you know, okay, I've given this my fair shot. I really have. And I'm not going to look back and say, oh, you know, what if? And I also realized that, you know, when I was winning matches, I didn't think I was better than other people. But it was getting to the point where I was losing so much and I was starting to think it was affecting my self-worth. And I knew that that was not healthy.
Right.
And I just said, okay, it's enough.
So do you have an idea at this point about what comes after tennis?
I didn't. I said, well, okay, when I was at Rice Anderson Consulting, which is now Accenture, they had a big presence on campus, and you know, a lot of students graduated and took jobs with Anderson. I did get a job with them. I actually had two offers, one in Texas and one to work in the chief financial officer's office in Chicago. And Jong and I, my husband, I'm introducing him now, but Jong and I met in high school and when I was 15, and I went to Jong's senior prom, and we then went our separate ways during college and then got back together after college. You know, even through all my tennis and my travels, we had always stayed in touch, and we had been dating and doing sort of the long distance thing. And he had come over to Europe a couple times with me in the summer for the summer tournaments. And he was now at business school at the University of Chicago. And so one of these job offers was with Anderson Consulting in Chicago. And I thought, well, you know what? Up until now, Jong's always been the one to come to me. You know, I have a chance to go to him, and we can see if this, you know, what we can do with our relationship, if we really can spend some time together. And, you know, long story short, it worked out. We've been together ever since.
And, I have maybe an ignorant question, but yeah. What does doing long distance look like not in these days? Because now doing long distance is like I can talk to you in 2 seconds and you're, you know, halfway around the other side of the world and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, we're talking about, the 80s, really. It was hard, right? I mean, we didn't see each other that much. There was no texting. We wrote letters and we talked to each other on the phone, but it wasn't every 5 minutes. It wasn't even every day. So yeah, it was tough.
Tough. Yeah. All right. So you moved to Chicago.
So moved to Chicago.
Cold
and windy. Took this job with Anderson Consulting, but very conservative. And I was working in the chief financial officer's office as a financial analyst, you know, of which I knew very little, but you know, maybe my background at school did help. And they had a great training program. But I went from basically working out all the time, being outside, playing tennis, to being inside an office for long days in a conservative office, sitting at a desk, referencing small numbers. And it was not a good fit for me.
What does that do like to your emotional state? Because I mean, you're getting like all this vitamin D and being outside and moving your body. And now it's like,
yeah, it was, I had sort of hit a brick wall. What have I gotten myself into? I quickly realized, okay, this is not going to be a long-term solution. But I also realized I need some experience. You know, the tennis experience was great and it certainly counts. And as I said, is sort of, you know, helped form me more than anything. But I need to stick with this at least a little while. So it was during this time, actually, that two things happened. One, I applied to go back to school. I applied to business school. And the second thing that happened was I started running.
Oh.
I started running. And, you know, I had run as part of training for tennis, but I had never really been a runner. I would get off work and I'd start running along the lake. Jong and I had an apartment down in the Printer's Row area, and you know, I'd leave our apartment and I'd run, you know, like 3 to 5 miles. And it was the best time of the day where I felt like myself again, like, okay, I'm still alive. I just need to move. I need to sweat. And that was really sort of probably the best thing I could do for myself, the most therapeutic, as well as sort of kind of formulate my next plan. So I applied to business school.
At the time when you started running so frequently, did it start as a convenience thing?
Convenience in that I need to do something and that's the easiest thing to do.
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it was like, oh, I'm done with work. I don't need to pay to go somewhere.
Right.
I can just put on some shoes.
Yeah.
And get out there.
Okay.
So you apply to business school and you get in.
So I applied to business school. I applied to the evening program, actually. And I started at Kellogg as an evening student while I was working at Anderson Consulting. So I stayed at Anderson. I did my first half of the program as an evening student and taught tennis to kind of supplement in the summers. And I had finished half the program. I transferred to the full-time program and did the last half of the program full-time, which was awesome.
And so you graduate from business school. You're still in Chicago.
Yep.
And you have an aspiration that you want to integrate your passions for fitness and wellness and all of this newfound business knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. And I should say, along the way, Jong and I got married. Yeah, so we both had jobs. Now he's working in Chicago and I'm graduated from business school. And we decided, okay, we want to be back east. We want to be near our families. And we were kind of in both interviewing and really fortunate. John got a job with Timberland, which is in Hampton, New Hampshire. And I got a job at Reebok as an associate product manager for tennis, which for me was like, how perfect is that? How lucky was I? They came and interviewed on campus. And I was like, I am going to get this job. And I did. And I did.
You guys should have seen my facial expression. I was like, how could that have been more perfect? That's like unbelievable. And so wait, is Reebok at this time, where are they based? Because now they're in Boston.
So they're in Boston.
What a sweet new life stage though. Like the both of you working jobs that seemingly you're passionate about.
Yeah.
And is the job at Reebok everything that you had hoped for?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Just a, you know, fast-paced industry, something that I knew a lot about. I got promoted quickly, moved up the ranks, and yeah, it was a great beginning.
I can only imagine how different it must have been to work for a company like Reebok then versus working for a company like you do now. Just such a different state of sport and industry and
yes,
God.
Yeah. No, the industry has changed. It really has changed a lot over the years. And in some ways it really hasn't, you know what? Now those were the days when Reebok was vying with Nike for the number one position for a nanosecond, but it was fast and furious and a lot of fun.
So how long are you at Reebok for?
So I was at Reebok for about 4 years. And I should say it was during that time, you know, shortly after I started at Reebok that Haley was born, our first child, our oldest daughter, and Hannah was born when I was at Reebok as well. So I had two little girls, and John and I were both working. You know, we had the benefit of his parents and my mom, especially, who helped a lot with the kids, so that we could kind of both work like we were and travel like we were traveling. And then an opportunity came up to join Tommy Hilfiger footwear. Stride Rite was a company that had the license for Tommy Hilfiger, sort of launch footwear for Tommy Hilfiger. Back in the days, Tommy himself was super involved. I'd go to New York once a week and you know, be working with Tommy and his direct team. So that was a huge learning experience and kind of a lot of fun. I'd worked at Tommy for about 3 years, and then Sarah was born. So I took some time off, you know, and that was a great thing. It was really a gift, quite honestly. And actually, one of the things that happened next was Sarah was our third, and having babies is great, but it's hard, and it's hard on the body too.
Yeah.
And with each pregnancy, your body's a little less resilient. Mm-hmm. I had never had much trouble kind of bouncing back. I've been sort of fortunate. But after Sarah, I was like, well, I'm just not quite bouncing back the same. And so I had a treadmill and I was running when Sarah was napping or whatever. Somehow I got into Taibo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Billy Banks.
Billy Banks.
Billy Banks.
Absolutely.
A TBT for Hurdle today.
Oh, for sure. So I would put Billy Banks on in the living room and have, you know, at this point, maybe now Sarah's starting to crawl around, and I would do my Taibo workouts. And those were game changers for me.
I love it.
It, you know, I loved him. I loved the sort of the aggressiveness of the workout, and I loved the results.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 45 minutes of that and you were like sweating and felt great and you got results. And at one point, I remember being in the living room doing the workout. I was, you know, down on all fours doing leg kicks. And at this point, Sarah is crawling around. And I was so into the workout, I didn't realize she was behind me. And I actually kicked Sarah about 4 feet across the room.
Okay, that's frightening.
It's frightening. Sarah survived. She's absolutely fine. But yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's Yeah, multitasking.
A quick Google search just to make sure that I don't offend anyone. Billy Blanks, B-L-A-N-K-S. I called him Banks. And two, right now, apparently, he lives in Orange County.
Really?
Who knew? You guys can hang out.
Yeah, we can connect.
Tybo embodies late 1990s culture, and its creator, Billy Blanks, is still going strong. First Google result.
Awesome.
Oh, man. Okay, well, thank God Sarah's okay.
She's great.
You get back into shape that makes you feel better about yourself, mm-hmm. which is important.
Mm-hmm.
And how long until you go back to working again?
I think I was off for about a year and a half then.
Okay.
Yeah, which was really good.
And then what's the next opportunity? And do you actively seek it or do they find you or how does that happen?
They found me. I think it was after that that I went to Timberland.
Okay.
Yep. They had been calling me. And
is your husband still at Timberland?
Jong had actually left. It ended up, we both ended up back at Timberland. He was there for his second tour of duty and I was there for my first. And I headed up the women's business. And, you know, that was a great company and a really good fit for me too. Super into the outdoors. And, you know, I loved running the women's business and sort of helping get that business, you know, on the map.
When does New Balance come into the picture?
I joined New Balance in 2009. I was there for 6 years as a general manager of women's kids and part of the lifestyle business. You know, they actually hired me and said, we want you to run the women's business and we want you to really focus on wellness, which was just sort of right up my alley. I had a great, small but mighty little team of primarily women, and some of the work that we did there to sort of put New Balance Women's on the map and reframe it and reposition it. Yeah, it was great. It was a really good time.
New Balance for 6 years, and then what happens?
Yeah, you know, I got this phone call from a recruiter, and it's the kind of thing that had they called me a week before, I may not have even taken the call. But it was early on in the winter of 2015, which was an especially harsh winter. We had just, you know, shoveled the flat roof for like the third time in 10 days. I got this call to be the president of the Teva brand. I returned the call and I started talking to the recruiter and it was just really kind of interesting. And Jong and I talked about it and it's like, it's in California. I mean, what are the chances we'd really do something like that? And he said, well, just, you know, take the call, continue with the interviews. I was taking a trip to Asia for New Balance and I actually stopped on my way back here in Santa Barbara and spent a weekend and interviewed and went out to dinner and, you know, got to know a couple of the key people and looked around Santa Barbara. And like you said, there's a lot to like. This is a beautiful, beautiful place. And talked to Jong and actually talked to Sarah because Sarah was a junior in high school at the time. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking in the spring of 2015. She's a junior in high school. And I said, you know, Sarah, I think I can get this job. You're not going to leave for your senior year. I'm going to tell them, hey, call me in a year. And it was really Sarah who said, you know, Mom, don't do that. Get the job. We could go there. Why not? And, you know, that's really brave of a junior in high school to have that kind of attitude. I kept going with the interview process. Long story short, they made me the offer and we decided to go, which doesn't sound maybe like such a big deal, but it kind of was. I mean, we lived our whole life in New England, a lot of family, a lot of friends. And so it was a huge decision.
I think a lot about, like, I love living on the East Coast. I love New York. I do love coming to visit here. I feel like my pace is very New York, like how my head works. But I do think about what it would be like to come somewhere on the West Coast or just toward the West a bit. And it makes me a little unsettled to think about leaving that behind, to not be able to take an hour and a half to go see my parents or if something was to happen. It just, it makes me a little anxious.
Well, that's the hardest part.
Totally.
That is the hardest part. I mean, staying in touch with my parents and seeing them enough, it's the hardest part for sure. But at the same time, we really haven't looked back. I mean, 5 years has gone by quickly. I just travel a lot for this job, so I do get back.
So talk to me now about how this position for you feels at Hoka, at least from the get-go. I mean, it's not just Hoka, I'm sure, but I spoke with Kelly Cortina. She is at the North Face, and she talked to me about how difficult it is to be a woman at such a big company because there aren't many of them in top leadership positions, especially in sport.
Yeah, that's very true. In the industry and at the company I'm at, that's very true. The higher up you go, the sort of harder it gets and the more male-dominated it is. This thing we call sort of unintentional bias is really real. I mean, kind of very good people that are well-intended, but we all bring different unintentional bias to whatever it is that we do. And I think, you know, higher up in the ranks in business, it's very prevalent. You know, it's something to be mindful of and to navigate carefully. It takes great confidence, but I'm not done yet.
I'm not done yet. Where do you draw that confidence from when it comes to being in these difficult situations?
I'm fortunate. I have a great team, many of whom I recruited from the East Coast to join me at HOKA. I draw back regularly to, I think, my experience from sport and being a competitive athlete. And that, you know, that confidence.
I mean, HOKA is one of Deckers' more recently acquired brands over like about 5 years now. Or, well, I think we're about 8 years old now. So, yeah. So how has that been kind of being at the helm of what is for the corporation a newer business?
So HOKA is about 10 years old. Deckers acquired it about 6 years ago. And it is growing like gangbusters.
Yeah.
It's fast and it's furious. And, you know, this is the team. It's my team. The job that they've done to scale this brand is just incredible. You know, when we started 4.5, 5 years ago, you know, the brand was about $70 million. And it'll go well past $300 million this year. So we've not supposed to share a lot of numbers, but you could say, you know, more than tripled top line and more than 5 times bottom line. So it's a real success story. It's been a ton of fun to work on. And we've really focused on very basic strategy, which from the beginning, which is really grow awareness, win with women, bold design, operational excellence. And I should say, first and foremost, you know, building out a world-class team.
It's also interesting because I feel like for people that don't have the brand recognition of HOKA, when they describe a HOKA sneaker, they're like that really big, bulky sneaker.
Yeah.
Do you guys just own that?
You know, we do own it, although, you know, a lot of people are taking notice and starting to develop their own versions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I truly believe that HOKA is a better mousetrap when it comes to, you know, being just the best running product out there. It is both the geometry as well as, you know, the foam and the thickness. You know, the biggest thing too is that people experience this HOKA brand and it's, they find it to be life-changing. You know, people that couldn't run anymore, some people were having, you know, trouble standing for long periods of time, they put on HOKA and they're able to get off their couch and start running or get back to running. And we have consumers on a daily basis reaching out to us saying, you know, you've changed my life.
Can you give me a little bit of insight as to, I guess, like in layman's terms, like the technology that we're talking about when it comes to why is it that the HOKA sneaker is enabling these people that thought that running was a pastime for them able to get back out on the road?
Yeah, it's really the geometry of the bottom, the foam that we use, and that combination and of this rocker sole. And, you know, you put it on and you feel it. And what it does is it helps you recover quicker. And it also helps you go more efficiently through your gait cycle. Mm. And
that's how your foot hits the ground when you're running.
Correct.
I feel like
some of the times.
I like need to like really break this down because I do. I'm super thankful. The audience is like a ton. A lot of them are super into running. But sometimes it's like the words that you and I feel are like the ABCs. It's like, oh, this is what a gait cycle is.
Yes. Thank you.
This is pronation.
Right.
All of those things. Okay. So it makes a more effortless, efficient gait cycle.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you think about, you know, the repetitive motion of running, if every step can just be a little bit easier and a little bit more gentle on your body, you know, that cumulative effect is considerable.
In more recent years, I would argue, and I'm sure you'll co-sign this, that the offerings from HOKA have become, some of them, a little less quote unquote bulky. And now you offer shoes that aren't necessarily 100% for running either.
Yep. We're still pretty focused on running, but we have a couple models that are more fitness. Mm-hmm. And what we've tried to do aesthetically is without compromising the bottom unit, which is where you get all your cushioning and cradling, what we've tried to do aesthetically is make it look a little slimmer. So some of that, you know, with paint lines or whatever. And I think, you know, the job that they've done on the product to make it, to make the aesthetics more pleasing has been considerable while not compromising the functionality of the product.
Being in such a arguably sought after position, being someone who is making a lot of really great decisions at a big company, I'm sure at times it's stressful. You think about some of the best advice that you've been offered in business, and what do you think about?
Brené Brown, listening to some of what she's done and reading some of her books, just the idea of clarity is kindness. I think being direct and clear with people is so incredibly important. The benefit of, you know, working closely with a lot of young people and men and women, just great young humans, and seeing them at the earlier stages of their career and you know, helping them kind of navigate and bring confidence to what it is they do, and helping them to bet on themselves. You know, that's a big thing. It served me very well, and I like to share that with other people too.
I'm curious about this idea of mentoring people that are younger than you while still knowing that you want someone to lean into for like the same sort of purpose for yourself. Like, is there a point where you would say that you have to make a transition into being the mentor versus the mentee? Or do you think that there's always room to play on both sides of the court?
Absolutely. Always room to play on both sides of the court, for sure. I mean, I'm always learning, you know, and learning and growing. And that's what makes it interesting and fun. And, you know, and the longer I've been doing this, the more I realize, oh, I have a fair amount of stuff to share if people are interested.
I'm interested. I know the hurdlers are interested. I think also what you said about being direct and also being kind mm-hmm. is very important, because I think that's a lesson that so many people are constantly learning or coming to understand is even possible.
Yes.
It's not like you have to be cutthroat or rude to get what it is that you want. You can be direct and also be kind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and at the same time, you know, sometimes you have to take actions that are not popular and won't be seen as kind by everyone. But I think that's really important too. Like when you know you have to make a change, you know, if you have to let someone go. I mean, these are hard things and they're affecting people's livelihoods, but you have to do it because it's the right thing for the business. And ultimately it's the right thing for them too, doing that and not waiting and not pushing off for tomorrow what you really need to take care of today. That's super important.
You have an opportunity right now to offer yourself one piece of advice looking back on the hurdle moment, which was going off to college, diving into tennis, leaving behind what was a pretty difficult family situation, and probably feeling a lot of pressure, especially put on by yourself. You have an opportunity right now when you look back on that to offer yourself one piece of advice. What do you tell yourself?
Bet on yourself. It's all going to work out.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time. Please take a moment and leave a quick review by clicking the link with the description to this episode. We all face multiple hurdles in life. I want to hear about yours. Reach out to me at emily@hurdle.us. Connect with the podcast on Instagram and Twitter @hurdlepodcast. Wendy, how do they keep up with Hoka? Where can they find them? Maybe where can they find you? Give me some details.
Well, they can find Hoka at hokaoneone.com. That's Hoka. O-N-E-O-N-E.com.
Not 1-1.
Correct. And you can find me at wendy.yang@deckers.com.
Thank you so much. Another hurdle conquered. Catch you guys next time.